was there anybody in your group in your squadron that went crazy or got scared or anything like that?
Yes. We had the engineer aboard our plane. We were flying a mission, and he sits in the upper turret, the top turret, on top of the aircraft. And evidently, a piece of flak came through his turret and went straight by his neck and cut his oxygen hose in two, between his oxygen mask and the tank. And he passed out and fell down in the bottom of the turret. And the pilot asked the co-pilot to look to see about him, since he was the closest man, and he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't get out of his seat to see what was wrong with him. So I came from the nose back there to the turret and found that his oxygen mask cut through. Grabbed an oxygen mask that we had spare oxygen mask aboard, got one of those, threw it over his head, and plugged it into the oxygen and started giving him artificial respiration. And of course he came to, and then whenever he was almost crazy anyway then, and that just drove him crazy, because he hated that the other men told him aboard that the co-pilot wouldn't help him, and it made him extremely mad at the co-pilot, and so he refused to fly with us anymore. He was having nightmares at night, and I'd wake up. Sometimes they'd come get me and say, Paul Mary, his name was Tom Paul Mary. He was from New York. But they'd come get me and I'd have to go over there and see what was wrong and straighten things out in the barracks. But other than that, he didn't give any trouble. We had one that was on Posada's crew that kept shooting through the barracks. And then we had a rat. And that rat, most people just fed him to get rid of it. Throw the food outside and let him go outside, and then he wouldn't come back in. But if somebody opened the door, he'd back in the barracks. So one night he darted back in the barracks, and this guy Lincoln pulls out his .45 and shoots it, and just splattered rat all over everywhere. So we had quite an affair about that rat. It got rid of the rat.
Yeah.
We had other things that happened that were real comical, and yet they weren't very comical at the time. We go to laugh about them now because, and at the time, you wanted to cry. But one day, we were flying an airplane that was equipped with radar, and we had a radar man aboard the plane. And he was jamming the guns of the Germans, the flat guns. And we were flying along, and he got up to use the relief tube. And when he started to set back down, he got his helmet, his flak helmet, hinge earpiece caught in the emergency chute that pulls the ripcord, that pulls the bolts out of the top of the airplane for ditching purposes. And so the shell went off, and you had a 10-gauge shotgun shell in each one of them, and they bam, bam, and here goes the metal pieces going back through our formation. And the radio operator called me and says, that Mickey operator is running out of the airplane. I said, what do you mean running out of the airplane? He said, he's opened the door and gone back through the waist. I said to the waist gunner, Modena, stop him. And Modena said, stop him, my foot. He's already pulled the door and jettisoned the waist door and is jumping out. There he goes.
He just jumped out?
And he jumped out of the airplane. He was so scared he thought we were hit, I guess. That's the only thing in the world I could think of. He thought we were hit because those shotgun shells went off over his head. And he bailed out of the airplane, and of course, he froze to death. You know what happened to him. It was 67 degrees below zero. And he pulled his chute just as soon as he hit the air, just after he wasn't 50 feet below the airplane, he goes pulling his chute. and you have to wait till you're down to 10,000 feet anyway. If you bail out, if you don't, you'll black out from lack of oxygen. So that's probably what he did, was black out and freeze to death. But now, that was one of the odd things that we had happen. And we had never had in the bomb group, or the 8th Air Force, as far as I know, we had never had anybody do that kind of thing before. Everybody knew what they were doing. But this guy, this was the first time he ever flew with us. And he said he was comfortable with the mission. And so I thought he knew what he was doing. But he didn't.
So did y'all have different missions each day, or
well,
week?
Well, we didn't fly every day. They wouldn't let us. They let you fly maybe 2 days in a row. Sometimes, if they had a big thing, well, we'd fly 3 days in a row. Mm-hmm. All-out effort. When we had all-out efforts, why, it was usually on a large target such as Berlin or Magdeburg, Munich, or Hamburg, or Kiel, one of those big cities in Germany, that we made maximum effort. Now, maximum effort, we put up about 2,000 airplanes, about 2,000 B-17s, and went to that target. And we were over the target 4 or 5 times, 4 or 5 hours at a time. And I don't see how the Germans stood it with bombs dropping on 4 or 5 hours at a time, but they did.
How do you feel about the changes that were going on at home, the women working in the industry for the war, and, you know, that type of thing?
Well, unfortunately, or fortunately, one of the two, I didn't get to see much of that.
Yeah.
Because I was stationed at different stations. Like, I started out and went to Santa Ana, Lux, Mississippi, Santa Ana, California, Hammer Field, Fresno, California, and Hamilton Field, and San Francisco, California, back to the Eastern Command, to MacDill Field in Tampa, Florida, and then to Avon Park, Florida, and then to Sebring, Florida, and then back to Avon Park, Florida, which were just 10 miles apart, and then I went to Savannah, Georgia, and flew up over the northern route, going to England, went through Bangor, Maine, and Goose Bay, Labrador, and then to Iceland, and then down to Wales. And that was the route that we flew going back and forth. I rode a boat over the first time, flew back, flew over, and then rode a boat back the last time. And I brought back 52 prisoners of war, 52 American boys who had been in the Air Force, shot down, and were prisoners of war with the Germans. And I brought them back and was in charge of them back to the States, and landed the day that the war was over in Europe, in New York.
Did you come in contact with a lot of concentration camps and prisoners of war and things like that?
No, the only thing I came in contact with was the 52 prisoners of war that I brought back. And we got them, they got to the boat at Liverpool, England, the same day I did. And we got on the boat and we started out that night coming, because everything left at night.
Yeah.
There wasn't any daytime sailing, so all at night. The local population was being heavily bombed. I got there in January 1943, and the Germans were bombing practically every night. And they were bombing either London or Liverpool or any and all Manchester and the different towns, but mostly right down on the southern coast, Poole and those towns down in there, Boringham, and so forth. But the local population was moving back up towards Scotland in droves. They had truck load after truck load of families just moving up, and they were building huts, Quonset huts, for them to live in. And they were building munitions plant up at Blackton, England, which was in Highlands up there. So they didn't have a whole lot to eat because the local farm economy could not support, never has supported England. England has to be supported by imports of agricultural products. They have no corn. They raise peas, but only one kind of pea, and that's the sweet green peas. And they do raise some wheat, but they couldn't raise enough wheat on that little island to go around because they had so many people. Then when we got over there, there we were adding to the thing. So we had K rations, which was cheese and crackers, and C ration, which was canned everything in a can. Most of it was beans, but there was some pork mixed in with the beans sometimes, and sometimes there was beef mixed in with it. Sometimes there was less beans and more potatoes, always a few potatoes mixed in with it. And that's basically what we had to eat from January through March of 1943. And of course, a lot of the troops got a little aggravated at the food, and they flew food in finally whenever they could get it. The airplanes flying from the United States over there. See, in the wintertime, the weather was so severe up in Iceland that you would get snowed in even if you had an airplane full of goods to eat. Why, it would freeze because the temperature at night in Iceland would go down to like minus 28 or minus 38. And so the airplanes in it would snow, and they couldn't get off the runway, and they'd be there for two or three or four days before they could get to England. So it was a real problem in early 43. When we started out in the 8th Air Force, whenever I first got there, we had about 138 B-17s in the whole Air Force. When I left there, we had over 4,000 B-17s and B-24s, heavy bombers. And we put as many as 2,900 of them in the air in one day on maximum effort. So things really changed. But they fed us Brussels sprouts there for a while, and in order to give them to us for breakfast, they dipped them in egg batter. And we had plenty of frozen eggs, and they'd mix those things up, dip those Brussels sprouts in egg batter, and then serve them to you along with some potatoes. We always had potatoes. But that was basically your breakfast there.
Do you like Brussels sprouts now?
No, I don't care for them.
Was it hard trying to adjust to our climate and their climate in such extreme temperatures?
Yeah, it was cold, much colder and much damper. The weather was 99 to 100% humidity for 4, 5, 6 days at a time. You wouldn't see any sunshine or anything in the wintertime. And you'd be trying to fly through that soup, and that's what we called it. And we'd go out there, and some days we'd go out to the runway to take off, and the weather was bad, and they'd delay us for 30 minutes. About the time we were ready to take off, delay us another 30 minutes, and we've gone as long as 3 hours like that before they cancel the mission altogether. And sometimes, of course, we got off and came back after dark. And that was the biggest mess you've ever seen. Everybody with their landing lights on trying to get in, and you trying to watch everybody for fear of mid-air collision.
Yeah. Was there ever a time when you wished that you
weren't
in war? You
wanted
to come back home?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to come home. Because I had a good time here in the States, you know. I was stationed at Lowry Field in Denver, Colorado. Oh, there was lots going on in Denver, and they had lots of parties and We just had a lot of entertainment and activities. I was stationed in California in those places, and they had movie stars come to the bases and perform and all that kind of stuff. And it was just a ball. You weren't out there marching like the infantry and crawling on your belly and doing all the things that they do. You were either in a classroom for 3 or 4 hours a day, or they made you go out and shoot skeet for maybe an hour a day.
Shoot what?
Skeet.
What's that?
That's where they have a, they call them pigeons, they have a clay product, big round, about 3.5 inches around, 3¾. And they put it in a little sling, and it slings it out, and you stand there and shoot it. So that you, you have to shoot it from different angles. It's coming this way one time, towards you another time, just all different, 1 o'clock through 12 o'clock. And the thing is coming at you. It comes out over your head, and you got to look, try to find where they're doing the thing. You're darting back and forth. And the reason for that is, that that's the way the aircraft would come in on the formation. The German aircraft would put up 30 fighters at one time, and those 30 fighters would concentrate on one group of airplanes and try to shoot them down. And like on the 11th and 12th of September 1944, and the reason I remember the date so well was, we lost the whole squadron, the 860th Squadron. Every one of them got shot down, all 13 of them. Boxberger was the last one to go. And I asked him why in the world they went way down there before they turned. They went about 20 miles out of the way at 30, and then turned and came back, and those fighters all just hit them in a group, and they shot them all down. So that's what, in reality, was the worst thing about the thing, the fact that they'd pick out one group and shoot y'all down.